This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Will McClay, Vice President of Player Personnel with the Dallas Cowboys, joins us here on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. And a good afternoon to you, sir. How the heck are you?
I'm good, man. How are you guys?
Oh, we're great. Thanks. And congrats on what appears to be a very successful draft. Do you agree with what a lot of people are saying, that it appears to be a home run here?
I think it's a well-executed draft. We'll see if it's a home run when we get up to the plate, you know?
Mm-hmm. Will, I was wondering if you could take us kind of inside the virtual war room when a guy that no one is expecting to be available at 17 in the first round with CeeDee Lamb is there. After the 16th pick goes off, just for our listeners and for me and for Gavin and for everybody but Broadus, who probably knows exactly how it goes, who talks first? Who's making the case for what? And how do you settle on, hey, we got a gift here and we're going to take it?
We're talking about it leading up to it because, you know, we have our guys that we valued, you know, at the positions of need. When you talk about the draft, it's twofold. It's position of need and best player available. You got to be prepared to react in those situations. As it was coming down, we were having discussions about, okay, this guy's gone, that guy's gone. And we're talking about it all the way through. And then, you know, when it gets closer to our pick, when we're two down, Jerry, as a GM, he starts having these conversations. We start talking about it. We had, you know, a couple of guys that we liked also, you know, on the defensive side of the ball. But at the end of the day, it was the best player on our board. We discussed it, and Jerry made the call.
What does the scouting report on CeeDee Lamb look like for you guys, if you could share that? Because mine says he's really good.
Yeah, you know what? You're reading from our book. You know, he has the ability to play all three positions. He could do some things in the backfield. He's an elusive guy after the catch, adding that part to it. But just the fact that he's another weapon that you can add with Zeke, Dak, you know, the receivers that we have, the tight end we have, our new different offensive scheme, there's going to be so many elements that are still the same, but when you add another weapon, that just expands the playbook as well.
Will, you had a discussion on the board as well about Diggs and Gallimore, you know, and the grades had to be really close, two different positions, but here you are, you go through a first-round discussion about your best available player. Can you walk us through the discussion then you guys had in the second round about the two players that had similar grades on your board?
Yeah, you know, after the free agency started, you lose Byron, and you know we have contracts coming up with players on our team at different spots, and so you start looking at things. And so when it's coming down, we have them with very similar grades, and we were discussing, you know, when you look at the draft, you look at where the first round through seventh round, the depth of your evaluations, your rounds, but you also look at the depth of positions. And what your desires are. We were looking for long, athletic corners that could come in and start right away. There were a few guys that we had. Diggs was there, and then Gallimore was there, but we thought that there was a more depth at defensive tackle and defensive end, so when players have the same or similar grades, we just decided to go with the player that there was less of his type than there were of Gallimore's type, based on how the board, the draft was unfolding and what was available to us.
It's Will McClay here with us. With Lamb, was it a total consensus, unanimous? How strong of a case could the other side make to go with a different position?
It was unanimous. I think the commitment and the way that we had talked about things building up to it, You know, we're going to get the, you know, the best player for us that comes down there. Because when you're in the first round, you're looking for guys that can come in, they can make an immediate impact, they check all the boxes, and if they have the skill set to place themselves, you know, at the top of your draft board, you'd be crazy not to go with that. And, you know, he's a player of great value.
Was the approach to the draft different than previous drafts you've worked with the Cowboys in that regard?
Say that question again. I'm sorry.
Was the approach, the mindset going in as far as how you wanted to execute your plan different than the other drafts you'd worked with the Cowboys before this year?
No, there was no change in approach. We do the same thing all the time. We want to value players the right way, make sure we go through the exercise and do that, and you know, make sure we get them where we're comfortable with and where they belong. So that stayed the same. I think the approach to getting the board together was different because of the conditions, but the putting it all together and going through it was the same.
Will, if I could go back about Lamb, what point of the draft did you look up at your board and know you had a chance? Was it San Francisco at 14 when they took the defensive tackle, or whereabouts did you start thinking, okay, we got a shot at this guy?
Well, I think when one of your top players, when you get past 7 or 8, and then, you know, you start considering the trades or the needs of the other teams. Now, and some teams have the, you know, they get the best player available at position of need approach. And so, you know, you go through all that and you look at what they need. You kind of look at some of the history of what the teams have done. But so around, I want to say 9 or 10, we started looking at what was available on the boards and started to somewhat kind of formulate and process through it a little bit.
Once you realized that you guys were about to pick the 6th best player on your board at 17, was there any sort of celebration? Because I had one. We had one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, anytime you can add a great young player, you know, we were excited about it. But just everybody, there were some fist bumps and some virtual high fives for sure.
So the virtual part of it's really interesting. And the way where we've been sort of kicking it around, it would seem like it would make the scouts' influence even bigger in this draft. Did you guys find that it went that way, or can you talk us through? Because it seems like it would be a lot harder for coaches to get a great feel for guys because you don't meet them, you don't bring them to the facility, they don't have pro days. Is that accurate, or how did you guys think about that?
Yeah, well, our process stayed the same. I'd say this. I think that we were further along because of the way we do things than other teams when this pandemic came out and we started, you know, being shelter in place, because we do a continuous study. We allow our area scouts, they are the GMs of their area. They come in and they are supposed to know that area. They know these players better than everybody else. Well, we just continued that. We just didn't have the pro days and whatnot. To continue the process, but then we just dug in. The area scouts called and dug on all of their players. We had the virtual interviews and those things to kind of pull it all together, but our process remains the same. I think just the commitment to it and the time that we were able to spend focused on the draft board building process as opposed to being on the road, getting pro days and doing all that stuff, I think that changed that part of the process. And so we just adjusted and jumped in, you know, with both feet and kind of handled it that way.
Will, you guys all year long were scouting, your college guys were scouting for Jason Garrett's staff. And then you had to flip and go for what Mike McCarthy, talk about the transition to that. And then a follow-up to your, what you just said, a follow-up is, when you guys were meeting, did you have your guys present it to you in a different way? Did you have your area scouts just do their areas, and then you guys as decision makers put together the board that way as you went along this with the virtual stuff?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is, you know, this was a unique situation. We'd been with the same staff for 10 years and had an understanding of them and their likes and dislikes, and so then – you know, you get a new coach, a new staff comes in. You know, we started entertaining what they wanted and what they were looking for in free agency. But one of the first things that McCarthy said that made me jump up and down was he said, you know, players over scheme. If we don't have a scheme diverse enough to handle taking good players and figuring out where they fit, that was a unique thing to hear a coach say, because most of it's system-based, you know, when they look at things. So that opened the door for a lot of things. But when we went through the whole deal, we went through free agency, and we did that with a great job from Jerry and Steven and our guys on the pro side in free agency, filling the holes where we didn't need to react and felt like we needed to go position of need over, you know, maybe the best player available. So you're never one player away. We went through that whole process, and we put the board together with the scouts presenting by area to my college scouting department, the leadership group with Lionel Vitale, Mitch LaPointe, Chris Hall, and Drew Fabianich. We went over the area stuff first. It was over each area, and we set a board kind of that way from that. And then we did the big meeting with the decision makers and represented the scouts' input, as well as the national scout, the college director, the character information, the medical. We put it all together in a process that we did that over a week. We spent the first week with the area guys, and so that gave us an opportunity to hear guys twice and really get a good feel for how we felt about them.
Will, did you, with this, the way the virtual meetings and stuff are, is there anything when you knew this was going to happen, was there anything that you went and looked at, studied how maybe people do businesses overseas, how they use the virtual meetings and stuff? Is there anything that you tried to kind of say, okay, I could draw from this and that in order to have the meetings to be as productive as you guys did?
No, really what I looked at was, you know, one of the greatest things about our process is that we all get to communicate. So just to try and come up with a way to make sure that there was an organized way for us to communicate and accomplish things day by day so that we would knock this task out, make sure we hit everything and go the next day to the next thing. But just kind of looking at the time blocks we had with nobody being able to be out on the road and then being allowed to talk to more players, either as a group or individually, just tried to construct a way to make sure that we, you know, dotted the I's and crossed the T's and got to find out as much as we could about the players using the virtual, you know, the conferences, the video conferences and things like that.
Will, how important were the IT guys for you, and who got to run the Cat 5 or Cat 6 cable out to the Jerry boat?
they were phenomenal to put all this stuff together with everybody being in different parts of the country and then making it work seamlessly with, you know, and being concerned about bugs and what pitfalls there may be and thinking ahead of it and being ahead of the curve where we didn't have very many issues and then kind of managing it all, keeping it all secure, all those things. They were the MVPs of the whole thing, honestly, because we wouldn't have been able to do it without all their hard work and all this technical. I mean, I was in here with three giant TVs and the heat was beaming off of it. I think my electric bill is going to be really high this month. But it was just a process that they helped. It was seamless. I mean, there was some apprehension at first about how it was all going to work. But once we got on it, we really started to see it. And you know, I think we'll use some aspects of it moving further.
Will, I wanted to ask you, though, about, okay, I'm a big believer in momentum in a draft, and you guys take CeeDee Lamb, and then from that point on, it's like you guys had the momentum. You caught the breaks with, you know, you had to make the decisions about the second round, and then you got Gallimore in the third. You got a break there. But talk about, though, when you got down into day three, the goals. I've always told guys here, it's like, you know, you're looking for traits, things like that. But when you got down, you guys were selecting, like, you know, guys that maybe around earlier, people, were you surprised the type of player that were on the board in day three for when you were able to select?
Yeah, I think that because of how we valued them, you know, you want to get value for, you want to at least get a return on investment for your value, and you really want to try and get more return on investment. So as we put together our board, we value guys with certain in certain ways, and that value that we place on them has a projection on it. We have guys that we feel could be projected to starters or high quality backups and turn into, you know, kind of starting players. So when you go through it, we're looking at it. And the unique part about this draft was there may not have been as much information for all you wonderful people in the media that have these wonderful ways of digging out information and find it because of, you know, hey, you look at who the Cowboys brought in on their visits and who was at this workout and who was at. So people constructed a board based off of their department, you know, their department work. So everybody's board was a little bit different. So when the players came out, we had the right value on guys for us, and we got a great asset at a lower investment. And so we feel like that was just very, very beneficial to us based on how we structured the board and how we saw players.
Will McClay with us here on The Fan.
Do you have a guy that the Cowboys took on day three that was like the pet cat for you? Is there a guy that kind of fell there and you're like, yes, that's my guy?
Well, they're all my pet cats, but I got one pet cat that's bigger. I mean, I really love, like Bradley and I, getting him in the fifth was huge for us because he's a really good player. But, you know, me personally, I had a guy that I liked kind of going through it and just felt like, hey, boy, if we can get this guy by the fourth round, we'll be in great shape. Was Reggie Robinson, just from his traits. You know, you're looking for press corners, and everybody had the big ones up here at the top. But the great part, you know, as Brian alluded to on the third day, is finding those guys, those scouts that we've done the work on, and that you've really got a good feeling about and being able to get them.
Is that sort of the balance on day three? Because it's interesting. Reggie Robinson seems like a traits pick where he's an incredible athlete, and then Anai didn't test well at all, but the tape is good. So how do you bounce back and forth between that?
Well, you know, I don't rely on the numbers. There's a bunch of people have made a bunch of mistakes on the underwear Olympics and the combine and how fast guys run and all that stuff in shorts. You know, we want to see if the tape matches what it is. But then, you know, something that we're big on, and I'm especially big on, and we talk about it all the time, is the reactive athleticism. Are you able to do all those things in situations where you have to react and use that athleticism? And Anai's motor intensity, his instincts, those things allow him to play faster. And so that wasn't a huge deterrent. And I know that, use an example, Terrell Suggs, who's one of the all-time great sack leaders, didn't run great at his pro day either.
Yeah, 4.9 bad, but everybody loved the player. Hey, Will, real quick, though, I want to give Chris Hall a lot of credit for the way he keeps the board intact. You know, for you guys, you got down into the free agency part of things, and Stephen Jones said there were seven players that you signed off that board of guys you had on the draft, and that makes it work for you guys. Can you run through maybe one or two of those guys that were on your board that you might say, hey, listen, keep an eye on this undrafted guy? You guys have done a heck of a job of cultivating those guys and those guys turning out to be pretty good players.
Yeah, I really can't get into the college free agent yet because we don't have the contracts on them. But really our process is guys that are left on our draft board are the priority guys that we go after in free agency. And so that allows us to, you know, they're on the draft board for a reason. And so after the draft, if they're available, we want to take every step in trying to get those guys on our roster because we value them in that way. So really, when you go down through it, the number of guys that you can get that were on your draft board as free agents, we kind of look at that as extra seventh-round draft picks.
Will, in closing, how much of an edge is it when you have a coach that says, just get me good players like Mike did for you? You said that's kind of rare in the NFL.
Yeah, it's just, you know, when you have a coach that comes in and says, hey, let's get us good football players. And if we can't find a place for good football players, then there's something wrong with our scheme. Well, he realizes that it's not the X's and the O's, it's the Jimmys and the Joes. And so we have to set a high standard of what it is for players at each position to get the first, second, third round grades, all that stuff. But if we do that and then we explain what the guy can help us do to win and what his areas of concern are, now we give the coaches a better picture of what we're drafting. And through our process of tape work, our scouts do a phenomenal job with tape work, and we do a thing where we have our tapes and we set those things up. And it's not a highlight tape. It's the good and the bad, and it's the essential that they're supposed to do at the position. And it may cut down the coach's work from doing, you know, four games. We might have eight games on this deal that shows what this guy can do. So our scouts doing that, not only do they learn the player and speak with him like they know the player and what he can do, not only the character stuff, but we evaluate. There's two parts of scouting. It's the scouting, it's the gathering the information and the evaluating. The tape allows you to evaluate. We make those tapes. The coaches get an opportunity because we were all over the place and everybody didn't have all of the tape, but they were able to go to that and also get a great picture of what that player was.
Will, who actually hits the button to make the pick?
The GM, Jerry Jones.
Okay.
I mean, we go through the process, and our job in scouting is to be the lawyers. We're presenting all the information, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We're giving the grade. We're putting that up, and then we go through the process. Jerry listens to it all, and he's going to ask for that input, and he's going to say, this is what we do. Are we good with that? Yes, no. Speak now or forever hold your peace.
A-plus for you, Will. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.